Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the November 11 edition of Commodity Week. The United States Department of Agriculture has released a new crop production and set of WASDE numbers. Today, we'll talk with ag economist Darrell Good from the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Darrell, thank you for taking the time with us today and spending more time than usual talking about this set of numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture, the November crop production and WASDE figures. Can you begin by telling me your first impressions of those numbers when they were released earlier this week?
Well, everything is relative to my own expectations, I guess. I was surprised by the magnitude of the decline in the yield forecast, 1.4 bushels, I believe, lower than the October forecast. That's certainly consistent with past changes from October to November, but it was a little bit larger than I was expecting. And then secondly, I think the reduced forecast for feed and residual use during the current marketing year was a bit surprising. USDA, the folks at WASDE, dropped that by 100 million bushels. And, of course, they cited a couple things that make some sense, but they're looking at the declining broiler numbers that are occurring right now, and also recognize that the residual component of feed and residual use tends to be large with a large crop and smaller with a small crop. So the reduction, that maybe the direction is reasonable. The timing seems a little early to me, and we're still confused a bit by the low level of corn feed and residual use implied last year, and whether we really will be at 4.6 billion bushels this year. So I think maybe that's the big head-scratcher as we move forward is what do we find out when we get the quarterly stocks reports about how fast we're feeding corn.
So the United States Department of Agriculture changed several figures. You've already cited a couple of them. Forecast for production now of corn at 12.3 billion bushels. It did in the WASDE figures lower usage for feed and residual by 100 million bushels. That changed carryout just by 23 million bushels. Fundamentally, then, has it changed the corn market at all in your mind?
Well, it has in terms of the consumption forecasts are just that, are forecasts, and there's still a lot of uncertainty about it. But what is more certain is that we do have a smaller supply of corn available. So I think that does change the structure just a little bit. I think it says that any surprise on the consumption side is likely to be a little higher than what is currently forecast, and would result in somewhat smaller year-ending stock. So while the bottom line projection is not much different, I think it does set the stage for corn prices continuing to be well supported and perhaps responding to any indication that consumption is moving a little faster.
Those ending stocks move from 866 million to 843 million. USDA did not change its national average price for corn, and that range remains at 620 to 720. Are you of a mind that that is a good place?
Yeah, you know, it's a wide enough range that I think it's going to capture where we end up, but frankly, it looks like right now that we will really be at the lower end of that range for a marketing year average. The midpoint, which most people kind of gravitate to, is maybe appears a little high to me right now. We haven't had much opportunity to sell corn above $7 at this point. So I think it's going to be a little hard to average the midpoint of that 670, but certainly within that range, but maybe towards the lower end.
When we talk about that over time, in recent conversations we have discussed short crop, long tail, meaning that high prices up front with a short crop, and then the long tail would manage to push prices lower over time because demand would wane as the short crop was divvied out potentially. You suggested earlier on in a conversation that we had that there might be more volatility this year. Are you still of a mind that we're in a short crop, long tail situation?
Well, we have elements of that, certainly, and I guess technically speaking, you could argue that we did have an early high in the corn market because we have come down, you know, substantially from those late August, early September highs, just as the marketing year was started. But one thing that appears a little different here is that I'm not sure that we're really making any reductions in consumption at this point. I mean, even though USDA has forecast lower feed use, we're continuing to see, I think, profitability in all sectors by end users, livestock, ethanol. And so I'm not sure that we would right now expect a big seasonal decline in prices. That, yes, we've come off that peak, but we may not continue to trend lower until we get into the spring of the year, perhaps, and then if we have more acres, a good start to the growing season, then I think we would take another leg down in the corn market. But for now, it looks like more of a stable market through the winter months.
Can we go through each of those end users at this point? And let's start with the export market. Is your anticipation that USDA's number for export is correct and that exports will remain at that level, or are we at a high enough level for corn that it and short enough of crop and in a potentially economic situation that might not allow that number to be exported out of the United States for corn?
Yeah, it's a pretty small number at 1.6 billion bushels, and you know, early here in the year, we're just, you know, about 9 or 10 weeks into the marketing year. But if you look at our pace of exports and export sales compared to last year, we're only running about 2 to 3% below. We continue to see USDA raise its forecast for Chinese corn imports. How much of that comes from the U.S. is still to be seen. So I guess at this point, my expectation is that exports will not be any lower than the 1.6 currently forecast. And an outside chance, we could be marginally larger than that, perhaps not by a wide margin. But there is some opportunity to find a little demand there that's not currently forecast.
Ethanol usage at 5 billion, is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, and what we're looking at right now is you know, awfully good returns in both the ethanol production and ethanol blending sectors, and that will certainly persist through the end of the year as long as we have the VTEC in place. The real question then, of course, comes in 2012 as the 45 cent per gallon blending tax credit reportedly will go away, then what happens to the demand for ethanol for blending? I think we're going to continue to see pretty strong demand. We've got good exports of ethanol, and as long as ethanol prices are competitive with gasoline, we should see good blending demand. So we'll see an empirical test what happens when that goes away, but right now, indications are it will remain fairly strong.
And then you have the feed and residual area dropped by 100 million bushels from 4.7 billion to 4.6 billion. Much of that is feed usage, but a good portion of it is probably considered error correction, I suppose. Can we take them up in separate categories? USDA WASDE suggests that the broilers and a lower number of broilers making or poultry making its way through the system was the reason that it dropped 100 million bushels. Do you agree with that to begin with?
You know, I think the direction is probably right. The big question most of us have is the starting point for making that forecast. I mean, We're looking at last year at just under 4.8 billion bushels fed, which on the surface appears to be a very small number. I mean, it's because of the September 1 stocks estimate, feed and residual use came in last year 200 million bushels below the forecast that was in place 2 weeks before the stocks report came out. So the real question in my mind is the starting point of 4.8 last year really the correct starting point? You could argue that we might be a bit weaker than what we fed last year, but if that number was really 4.9 or 5, then 4.6 looks awfully low this year. We're not, on paper, we're not getting the increase in wheat feeding that folks reported or suggested we would have. So I think even with the prospects for reduced broiler production, probably fewer cattle on feed as we work through 2012, the total number still looks a little weak to me. So a lot will ride on the December 1 stocks estimate that comes out on January 12th, and we'll be able to make some calculations of how much is disappearing in that market.
Can you take me through the cattle numbers just for a bit and explain how that will work into the system? You just mentioned them. For instance, we know that the drought in the Southwest has pulled most of the cattle out on the grasslands out of Texas and they have not been replaced. But what does that really mean?
Well, it has kind of a differential impact. In the short run, and for several months now, we've seen placements into the feedlots running quite large, and total on-feed numbers running, you know, on a monthly basis 5 to 7% above what we saw a year ago. So all of those increased numbers on feed are very supportive for feed demand. Presumably part of that is corn. But then because we've had smaller calf crops the last 2 years, we know that we have fewer numbers of feeder cattle now out there that will be available to come into the feedlots as we move through 2012. So placements will begin to decline, and then eventually the total number of cattle in feedlots will also decline below previous year levels. So those declining numbers suggest that feed consumption in total in that sector will begin to wane as well. So coupled with what looks like reduced broiler numbers, we will have fewer mouths to feed as we go through the marketing year.
What about the expectations for the hog market?
Right now, we've seen a long period of really very stable numbers on hogs. Hog prices are very robust. If you look out into next spring and summer, you've got basically $70 hogs. I think those prices are at profitable levels. And so I expect at worst hog numbers will remain steady, and some outside chance that we may see a modest expansion in hog numbers. So from a feed demand standpoint, really the hog sector is the bright spot.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is the November 11th edition. Our guest is University of Illinois Ag Economist Darrell Good. You can find us online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. More with Darrell Good in a moment.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the November 11th edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production, of course, of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org, willag.org, where we post all of our agricultural programming. Darrell Good, ag economist from the OVI, with us. Let's take up the subject of soybeans. Start with the numbers as they were released this week from USDA, please.
Basically, two changes from USDA. One, slightly lower yield and therefore production number. U.S. average yield at 41.3 bushels. That's 0.2 below the October forecast, and that results in a slightly smaller soybean crop, I think about 14 million bushel reduction there. On the consumption side, a 50 million bushel reduction in the projection of exports. down to 1.325. That would be 176 million bushels less than we exported last year. And at the bottom line, did project a larger carryover, 195 million bushels, compared to the October forecast of 160, and then lowered the expected average farm price range by 55 cents.
Are you in agreement with most of those?
I think they're hard to argue with at this point. The export number, certainly we started very, very slowly compared to last year. I think we have to remember, however, that our export program last year started very, very rapidly. We had huge sales early, before harvest. China continued to buy aggressively in the first quarter of the marketing year, and our export movement was really front-loaded. Our first quarter exports last year accounted for 40% of the marketing year total, which is about 10% higher than is typically the case. So I think we have to be a little careful comparing this year's start to last year's start. If you back up 2, 3, 4 years, our start on exports and export sales looks pretty reasonable, which you might lead you to argue that maybe USDA is too pessimistic on the export number. But then you look at what appears to be shaping up as a very large South American crop, then you say, well, we're going to have a lot of competition come the last half of the marketing year. So you've got kind of, as usually the case, you've got evidence on both sides, but for what we're looking at right now, I think the forecasts are pretty reasonable.
Are there good fundamental reasons that you can discern for the exports to be at a rapid pace the previous 2 years, not compared to this year, but for in those 2 years, why that would have happened?
You know, it's basically just a function of the decisions of the importers. In both years, China stepped up and bought their needs very early in the year. And then once those needs were met, then we just didn't see very large new sales to China as the year progresses. So it's a function of really decisions by the buyer on timing in terms of their decisions about what they think is a good time, a good price to be booking shipments. So I don't think that can be forecast very well. And we do see quite a bit of variation from year to year in those seasonal patterns in both corn and soybeans.
We do much discussion about the South American soybean crop, the size that crop might be. Can you outline what you're seeing in this coming season for them?
Well, USDA has projected a crop that, for if you looked at combined Argentina, Brazil and Paraguay, which is not a large producer, but increasing there, you do see a forecast of a slightly larger crop than last year, with basically Brazil perhaps having a crop very close to what was harvested there last year, about 75 million tons, Argentina 2 or 3 million tons larger than last year. Even though USDA lowered that projection this month, it's still larger than last year's crop. So what we're hearing is weather conditions have been generally very favorable for planting and early growing down there. So while it is early, no significant threats to that crop at this point. So pretty reasonable expectations that with the acreage being planted that we will have a lot of competition there.
Let's come back to the United States, and I'd like to take up pricing for both corn and soybeans, but we'll take up soybeans first. Producers wrapping up a harvest of all types at this time either have made their sales across the scale or have decided to go ahead and store either in the bin or at the grain elevator for soybeans. There has been plenty of space, I think, in both sites to do that. Is there any reason for them to make sales earlier rather than later for soybeans?
Well, I think you have to ask the question, what is there out there that's going to push soybeans prices up from where we're at right now. And really, you just don't see a lot fundamentally that suggests that we need to move these markets higher. And so I'm just not very optimistic that we're going to see continued price increases. So as always, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. We got a long way to go yet, but I think on days when we do see some price strength, I would be tending to move additional quantities of soybeans.
And of corn?
Corn, I think fundamentally it might make the case that there's a little more opportunity there. I think at a minimum, corn prices will continue to be well supported at current levels with opportunities for somewhat higher prices as the consumption numbers unfold. So, again, maybe not a big price move. I see a little less risk on the downside in the corn market.
And one final item that I would like to take up related to liquidity, volatility, and the absence now of a large player in the marketplace, MF Global. Do you think it will have an impact, I know short-term, but longer-term in the marketplace, and their absence and ability to move large numbers of bushels in and out of the market?
Personally, I do not, Todd. I think in general, market activity by traders is a bit overrated in terms of its impact on prices. The market is big, a lot of players there, and I think really it will do quite fine even with these current problems we're having. So I don't see it having a long-term impact at all.
Do you base that on historical knowledge of Refco and Stotler and others that have passed?
Not so much. You just say, really, what is it that drives prices? And it's really not trading that drives prices. It's fundamentals. That's where the market always comes back to, and that will always happen.
Though there are those that would argue that trading can drive prices, but it does it intraday, maybe. Is that fair assessment?
Sure. I mean, we see volatility day to day, but money flows, in my mind, really do not set price levels.
All right. Thank you so much, Daryl, and we do appreciate you taking the time with us.
Very good.
That's University of Illinois Ag Economist Daryl Good joins us here on this November the 11th edition of Commodity Week. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming each and every business day, from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report, everything in between, and a way to sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's over on the right-hand side of the page. Just hit subscribe. And if you'd like to give us your phone number, cell number that is, we'll text you on USDA report days at about 7:30 with the releases. Please do that right now at willag.org. In Kansas City at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention, I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great weekend.